evening, everybody out there in Chester County and on my Facebook page. Coming to you one more time with none other than me, Brother Fonz, live from City Town Talk. And I'm telling you, I am so doggone excited. This is going to be a great way to start off our Monday. We not only have a law enforcement professional, I told her I'm going to call her a LEP, law enforcement professional, but I have a friend who is a hometown girl, if that's not politically correct, but she's from Coachville, and we're going to share some stuff. And look, I'm telling you, God is so good. He be blessing me with some fantastic people. Now look, who's ever on here, now y'all know what to do. Like Kim, if you're on here, or Iris, I need y'all to share this video so that way it'll get back to Brother Fonz. So in case anybody got any questions or anything, we can raise the comments right in real time. So like y'all just hold on, cause you know how I do. I ain't trying to be cute cause I got her as a guest. I still gotta do my phone and all that stuff. Who out there that's gonna share this for me? Did you hit share yet, there, Kahisha?
I did. I think I did it right.
It's gonna be okay. Can I call you Kai for tonight?
That is completely fine.
Yeah, cause you got too many syllables in your name. Okay, so what we're going to do is, and I ain't changed or nothing. I'm going to read Kahisa's bio. She gave me a nice short one, too, so we can get more meat and potatoes in the conversation and the Q&A. Kahisa is a law enforcement professional. She's a LEP with over 20 years of service. She grew up in Coachville and began her career in policing with South Coachville Borough Police Department. She transitioned to policing with a Metropolitan Police Department in southeastern Pennsylvania, where she's worked on a high crime risk task force. She spent time as a plainclothes officer and is currently a sergeant, concentrating on patrol operations and supervising the training of newly recruited officers. Her goal is to inspire excellence in law enforcement and bridge gaps between the police and the communities they serve. I think that's a great bio right there. Hey, look, do me a favor. Could you just say hi to all the viewers out there? Let's start off and say a little something, something.
Hey, everybody. I'm happy to be joining Fonz, my friend, my brother, a mentor. I'm so grateful for him asking me to be part of this conversation tonight. And he knows my love for not only what I do, but the community that he reaches out to. Coachville is home, and no matter where my zip code is, it will always be home to me. And I'm really grateful to be here. So hopefully during this conversation, we inspire that excellence in law enforcement and the community collaboration that I so hope for.
I like that. See, now I gotta say something to my viewers, because I know how, I'm sorry, I don't even know why I haven't gotten this back yet so I can see the comments and my viewers. I can never generalize people by race, creed, color, religion, or occupation. So, like, I can never go, oh, Mary Kyle shared it. Mary Kyle, you are so on the button. Hey, Mary Kyle shared it, so we're now up, and Mary Kyle said, oh, snap, I forgot, sharing now, Coastville's finest. She's talking about you. You know, hey, Mary Kyle. You know her. Kathy Smith said hello. Hey, look. Where was I? I'm something I can't generalize. Now, Brother Fonz, that's not what I do, right? So I can't, even in the midst of all that's going on in regards to policing and things of that nature, I can't say all police is bad, mainly because I know this one right here. So that negates that right there. So I can't jump on that gravy train with y'all. But with that being said, we're gonna start opening this thing up. Now, I'm gonna give y'all a little backstory. Kahisha used to go to the same church we went to, New Life in Christ Fellowship Church, bam, on Fifth Avenue. But for those of you who aren't really familiar with her, I have followed her writings for about 3 or 4 years now. At one time, she promised to start a blog. I don't know what happened with that, but that's besides the point, because her writing is deep, her writing is thought-provoking, and it's something special. So if y'all ever want to troll somebody's page, go to Kahisha Shula Zebley and just listen to some of the stuff she talks. She'll be looking real serious too about some stuff she could say, but it'd be some good stuff. And I'd be like her biggest fan. I'm like, yo, do it. I'll subscribe. I don't care what you say. So now, with that being said, I hope I didn't make it blush too much. And I hope your head don't get too big, because you got to get off my screen when this is over, all right? So here we go. Now I'm gonna tell you the truth. Other than Freda Maddox, you know Freda Maddox? She's the new sheriff. She's the sheriff in Westchester. She's the only other law enforcement person I know that's a female. She's an African-American woman too, man. She's special. I hope she's tuned in tonight too. But let me ask you, when you were growing up, did you see yourself as a law enforcement professional?
You know, I didn't, Fonz. It wasn't something that I aspired to. My plan was to go to Howard University for political science and then go on to Georgetown Law to become an attorney. And I graduated from Coatesville, and the year of my graduation, my dad got really sick, and he ended up passing shortly after my graduation, and it changed my plans dramatically for going away to school. And you know, I always, from my experience of staving off college, you know, waiting and ultimately not going as a young person, I always encourage young people, especially from my experience, you know, if you take a break, don't take too long of a break, because then the bills come and you feel more compelled to stay home to pay bills, and then it just kind of turns into this cycle. And that's basically what happened. I didn't go to school as I had planned, and but I still had a heart to be in the field of criminal justice in some way. And I had a really good mentor who was the police chief of Valley Township, which is, you know, which is within Coatesville, but it's, you know, just outside of the city. Right. And Chief James Bell, he was a really close family friend, a mentor. I used to perform a lot. I used to sing a lot. When I became a police officer, people were like, Keisha's going to be a police officer. I thought she was going to go sing somewhere. And I did have a lot of neat opportunities to sing and travel the world, really, with singing when I was younger. And he was so supportive. He would come to shows when I was performing regionally in the city, and just such a close family friend. And when I decided that I wanted to at least pursue criminal justice in some fashion, and did that by going to the police academy, he was a really strong support at that time.
Okay, so now, did he suggest that you become a police officer, or something in your mind said, I think I want to do this?
Yeah, something in my mind said that, you know, this is a way to still make a change and still be effective in the community that means so much to me. So let me look at being a police officer. So I researched it and I talked to him about it, and, you know, some other officers that were in Coatesville at the time that my family had relationships with. My family had a business in town. And so I had a lot of interaction with not just Valley Township Police, but the police in Coatesville. And it was all positive, and I saw them as, you know, my quasi mentors. And so yeah, it was something that I dreamed up, and I had some support behind it.
That's cool, cool. Now what business did your family have in town?
We had, it was called Keys Gospel Corner on 2nd Avenue. It was right next to the it was right next to Khalil's bookshop.
Okay.
He sold the African
books,
books. And I tell you what, this is a side story, but growing up, you know, being dark skinned was not always that favorable. You know, sometimes people say, oh, dark skin, light skins in style and all of that. So I had challenges with my complexion. And it was Khalil Davis who really inspired some self-confidence in me, taught me about loving my melanin. And I've been on the path of happiness and appreciating my melanin ever since. But yeah, their store was right next door to ours. And the barbershop was kind of in between our two stores, right on 2 North 2nd Avenue.
That must be right before I started opening up my stores and stuff like that. That's good. Nice side story, though. Nice side story. Now, let me ask you a question. Mm-hmm. Now, there's not that many female officers. Now, have you ever experienced any kind of like sexism or racism in the department?
You know what's interesting? So I started my career out in South Coatesville. I started in a small town, and we had mutual agreements where each of the small towns in the area, Coatesville, East Fallfield, Valley Township, we all worked together, and I had the greatest relationship to maintain a lot of those relationships still to this day, you know, almost 20 years fast forward. And I experienced really nothing but love when I was in Chester County working in a small community, and didn't really have too many brushes with anything that I would consider overt sexism or racism. When I moved on to working in the city, that was a different experience, and very different experience, and experienced some overt, some covert racism and sexism, and still experience some of those things. But I'm grateful to say that my experiences where I first began policing were really positive, and I'm grateful for those relationships that still exist.
What's up? Let me acknowledge a few people that's checking in. We got Nelson Ojeda said that they love you and me, straight from Puerto Rico. We have Elizabeth Norman, Sister Norman. She said, greetings, Mrs. Zebley. Oh, that's just so nice. Sister Norman, you know I love her too, right? Nelson said, hello, Zebley. Seville. Iris Holmes said, did you make history as the first African-American female police officer in South Coastville? Did you make history on that?
I sure did, actually, yes. Thank you for reminding me of that.
Yeah, people are following you, I'm telling you. Let me see now, what else we got? What were some of your biggest challenges in the academy? Because you did have to go to an academy, right?
Right, so I went to the police academy. So the way that I went to the police academy was I sent myself. I wasn't hired by a police department that then sent me to the academy. A lot of folks, if they go on to either the state police or some of the larger city police departments, they will be hired and then sent to the police academy. So they're basically employed and go into the police academy through that employment. That wasn't the case for me. I was working full-time in Chester County Courthouse. I worked in the finance department, and I sent myself through the academy on a part-time basis. So for a year, I went every evening during the week after work. So that was my biggest challenge, was working full-time and giving the academy all the attention, not just the mental exertion, you know, really studying and being fully attentive, but the physical responsibilities. We ran a mile and a half, I think, each day. And, you know, we were preparing for the physical challenges of being a police officer. So a lot of times I was leaving the courthouse, making a beeline down Route 3 to the police academy, and, you know, balancing a full-time job in the academy. That was my biggest challenge.
Wow, okay. Hey, Puerto Rico is watching. Hey, good evening, Puerto Rico. Thank you for your viewership, Brandy Jennings. And as always, you know, Brother Fine just loves y'all, loyalty to the cause. So we're gonna keep right on moving. Let me get my big head up out this window and let me see something. All right, how do you like working in a community where you know a lot of community? How was that?
So it was interesting. Coatesville gave me so much respect, knowing that I was from the community. Sometimes I was policing family members, friends, people that I either went to school with or that my brothers went to school with. And it was a lot of positive because of that. If there was an issue, where I had to enforce the law with someone who either I knew personally or knew through some sort of association, there was this respect that I was given, and I always appreciated that, people who looked out for me. I remember one time being on South First Avenue, and there's a alleyway that runs almost the entire length of South First Avenue from Modena Road back. And I don't know if it's still there or not, but it's this dirt path. And sometimes I would patrol back there. Sometimes we'd have issues back there. And I remember this one time, it was still payphone right on First Avenue. And I was back there by myself. I mean, it was a time when it was only one police officer working at a time. And a couple of residents on the avenue, they couldn't tell if I was having some sort of trouble. I had been up there, I think, a little longer than they had seen me be in this kind of like wooded, secluded area before. So they picked up the payphone and called 911, and they said, there's an officer, and they described the area. I believe she needs help. And so other officers from neighboring jurisdictions, they were showing up to assist me. And I'm like, no, I'm just up here, you know, doing a routine check. But that was the kind of love and respect and care that the residents of the community had for me. And I took all of those experience with me to where I am now. And, you know, it was almost always a positive experience.
Yeah, I imagine that you could never discount relationships in regards to policing in an area where you know the people, where you're at. There's a great benefit, and you just said it right there, man. Huh? That's really nice. That's really beautiful. But we're going to move on before I start crying about all the beautiful stuff. Elaine, Michelle, top of the evening to you, young lady. Now, let me see what else I got going on here. Why did you move from here if you liked it so much? What happened?
So, you know, of course, with being in a smaller police department with very few officers, there's less opportunity to grow and to use your experiences and knowledges in a way that you feel can benefit the community in a bigger way. So that's what I did. I moved on to, I worked in Parksburg for a short time, and then I moved into a larger police department where I am now. And that was really the main reason behind it, was just to have more opportunity. And I struggled with that too. I felt like, you know, I'm leaving a community where I feel like I'm really having an impact, and it's still on my heart to be able to come back into the community that means so much to me and serve in a greater way, bringing back with me experiences that I have had policing in a larger police department.
Okay, now, this is just between me and you, all right? We ain't gonna let everybody know about this. You ever had to pop somebody upside the head while you was in South Coast? We're like, bam!
So, you know, I definitely had to use some tools that were sometimes the officer presence, sometimes the verbal commands didn't always work. And I can't think of a ton of times where that was the case, but yeah, you know, sometimes folks aren't always, it probably wasn't someone who was a resident, it was probably someone coming through who didn't know better.
Yeah, sister had to do what a sister had to do. I got you.
That's right.
Okay, Bernadette Runner is watching. Let me see, Mary E. Kyle has something to say. Perfect example of why officers policing their own community is a good thing. Same as teachers teaching in their own community. It still works. You are absolutely correct, Mary E. Kyle. Let's see if we can't get her back here. No, let's go on to the next question. Let me see what I got here. I'm having fun now. So what's the difference between working in a small town and a big metropolitan area like you're working in now?
So being in a small town, there's more opportunity to do the community policing, to really invest in knowing your residents, knowing the community, and them knowing you on a really, you know, intimate level. There were times in South Coast where I would sit at the bus stop and the kids would get off the bus and we would jump rope, and I wasn't ever really good at jumping rope. The girls would laugh at me. They'd let me turn double dutch, but I didn't do so good jumping. But it was really that, just those community interactions with the young people, shooting hoops when they got home from school, and being in a larger department, sometimes those opportunities present themselves, but they're fewer in between. And being in a larger city, there feels like oftentimes you're constantly enforcing. Like there's always enforcement and not as many opportunities to give back. And I've tried to balance that by doing some volunteering. There's some opportunities that I've had to volunteer with students from an elementary school within my patrol zone, and exposing them to not only my work, but the environment where I work, And so that's helped me feel a better balance. But I think those are some of the biggest differences, but there's certainly some similarities. But I'll say one more difference. When I worked in South Coatesville, there was one stoplight and, you know, some stop signs, but there weren't a bunch of one-way streets and things like that. And I remember when I started to work in the city, the thing I was concerned about the most was all of these one-way streets, because I'm not a city girl. And all of these one-way streets and navigating this like really big patrol area compared to a small borough, I was really, you know, a little intimidated by that at first, but I navigated it pretty well, pretty quickly. But I'd say those are some of the main differences.
Oh, good stuff, good stuff. All right, now you was on a high crime task force. What's the responsibility? What's high crime? What's all that about?
So one of the most effective ways to police, especially in a larger city, is to look at crime trends and what's driving those numbers, whether it's an increase in robberies or burglaries, and then having a response unit that is not, they're not focusing on regular patrol, like enforcing traffic violations, responding to lower level crimes that are in progress. Having a specialized unit that is perhaps first in surveillance techniques or utilizing plainclothes, which was part of being on that task force, and focusing specifically on crimes that are trending upwards. And a lot of times what my unit would be focusing on were burglaries and robberies. And there was even a trend of pickpocketing going on in the local coffee shops, like Starbucks. People would sit their purses down or their backpacks down, go to grab coffee, or they could even be just sitting right there. And really well-trained criminals would easily be able to pickpocket a wallet or some other valuables out of their purse. So that's what the task force was utilized for, to target those crimes that were trending upwards.
Okay, good stuff. Hey, let me acknowledge some friends out here. Denise Owens, it's good that I'm so glad we're friends now, Denise, so you have the opportunity to see some of the stuff. Michelle Williams, how are you this evening? And Yasmin Shrewill, good evening. Let me see, Irish Holmes got something to say here. Let me see. Being an officer, do you have to be a little more out the public eye when you're not working for the safety of your family and self? Do you have to kind of like keep a low key because you are an officer when you're out in the public?
Right. It's definitely something that I keep in mind, especially right now in a climate where there's more tension than usual. I'm certainly mindful of it. There are some things that I don't do. I don't have things on my car that identify me as a police officer. But I utilize my social media, as you are well aware. And oh, yeah. I don't hide the fact that I'm a police officer. And I don't hide from being out in the public, because I think it's important for people to see that I'm a real person in addition to being a law enforcement officer. And I want to be able to balance those two.
Oh, good stuff, good stuff. Okay, as a law enforcement officer, you ever had to discharge your gun? Now, you already said you hit somebody upside the head. You had to shoot somebody too?
I have not, outside of training at the range. I've not had to fire my weapon. Situations where there was active gunfire, and fortunately I haven't had to be the one directly involved.
Praise God for that, praise God for that. Okay, let me see. Tina Madsen, top of the evening to you, Tina. Good to see you. That's the Madsen sisters. Hey, now has there been any one incident that has left, and I know everybody wants to start hearing about the police situation that's going on now, but we gotta wade through all this before we get into that. Has there been any one incident that has left an indelible mark on your heart or in your mind?
So over a 20-year career, there've been a lot. There've been lots of highs, there have been lots of lows. I'd say there's two that were similar in nature. And I'll just give a quick disclaimer. The stories have a happy ending, but they may be a trigger for some people. So just they involved an attempt to take someone's life. So I just want to say that in case there's anyone who's watching that may be a sensitive subject for, but they do have a positive ending, both instances. So just quickly, so where I patrol, there's a river nearby, and we have lots of incidents that involve people that end up in the river either voluntarily or accidentally. And this one incident, there was an individual who was attempting to take his life and jumped in the river off the bridge. And at the time, there was the spirit cruise, yeah. the dinner boats.
Yeah.
So at the time, there was one, a similar boat like that parked. It wasn't in operation. It was after hours, I believe. And so the boat was parked, anchored along the river bank. And you could still see the individual in the river. He was at the time swimming still, treading water, as they say. And the marine unit was on the way, and there's a diver that's attached to the fire department that was attempting to get down into the river. And time was of the essence. It's a big current in that river, and pretty quickly it could turn into a recovery rather than a rescue. So in an attempt to save this individual's life, we went down to this boat and saw that they had attached to the boat those little paddle boats. Like if you go to the Philadelphia Zoo, they have little paddle boats that you can paddle around, and like a swan. Well, they had a similar boat like that attached to it. And we couldn't get it. It was attached by this chain, and we couldn't get it loose. And so I just made the decision to break into the boat and try to look for the key. And it was successful. We broke into the boat using, exigent circumstances in our favor. Was able to get the boat unlocked. One of the officers who was on scene, who's an avid fisher, paddled out to now the fire department diver is lowering into the water, and the current is sweeping him away. So he's able to paddle out to the firefighter, rescue him, and then paddle out to the individual who we were trying to save. And both were successfully rescued, got back to the riverbank, and were able to get into, get him the not only a medical help that he needed, but also the mental health help. And in that same vein, because I couldn't, when I was considering this, I figured this would be a question that you'd ask me. There's one other that really, stands out to me. It was another instance where someone was feeling low and gonna take their life. And it was a young woman. She had ingested a substance, and when we broke into her room because of the call that we got, we didn't get a response. And again, there was an exigency that existed where we entered the room and found her unresponsive. And on her phone, she had a last message that she had sent, and it indicated what she had taken. And it was not a common substance. And when we got her to the hospital, the doctors were uncertain of how to treat her. And so basically, we did a really quick research on the way, taking her to the hospital, research on what the substance was, what its reactions were, and what an antidote was. I'm literally on my phone Googling this. Wow. And when we get her to the hospital, the doctors actually have me back in the trauma bay explaining exactly what was taken, because at this point they're saying, if we wait until labs come back, we're not gonna be able to save her life. So with this sort of side of the road investigation and quick response, they were able to determine the proper antidote and save her life. And that was so meaningful to me because, I've had, unfortunately, lots of instances that didn't turn out that way. And she was such a young person. It was, I was grateful that it turned out in a positive manner, and that we were able to give the medical staff that kind of lead into saving our life. So they both had positive endings, not the greatest, you know.
That's all right. That's all right. Positive is positive. Crystal Love Maxwell is checking in, the DJ extraordinaire who beat me badly at Pinochle yesterday at her house, and she had a birthday recently. Happy birthday to you, Crystal. Thank you for the invite yesterday. Now, we're going to continue with Kahisha Shula Zebley. I like all them names. All right, now let me ask you a question. Have you found areas, because you're doing the patrol operation training and all that stuff, because you know some of y'all need some better training, right, or something?
Yeah, I do not disagree with that.
Can we talk about it?
Can we talk about
it? Here's your question. Have you found areas in patrol operations that can be improved whereby citizens are safe and relationships can be built?
So, areas of patrol operations where citizens can feel safer.
Uh-huh.
And
relationships can be built.
Relationships can be built. So, in addition to, you know, you mentioned training, there's certainly, you know, areas of improvement needed where when it comes to training and really digging deeper into, you know, just not scratching the surface on some of those trainings and it not being a one and done, because our profession is constantly evolving and the needs of the communities that we serve are constantly evolving. So training is definitely an area that's necessary. But I think some departments have already implemented this across the country. Many departments actually have implemented the use of body-worn cameras. And I think utilizing tools like that, in addition to there being transparency and timely communication to the communities when there is an incident or even before there's an incident, I think those areas when it comes to patrol operations can be improved. And just, you know, there's so many different directions this question could go, but one additional thing is having a very clear mission. Like many departments, most departments have a mission statement, but then ensuring that the folks that you have on your police department are in line with that mission, because a mission statement is only as good as the people who are intended to carry that mission out. And so if you have people who have either lost sight of the mission or who were never truly on board with the mission, then that hinders that community policing relationship, and it certainly creates a breakdown in every area, especially patrol operations.
Okay, so let's segue off of that. So what do we do about them? Because I'm hearing about the blank immunity. I forget the first name, but there's an immunity that y'all all enjoy that kind of like it's hard to hold you accountable to anything that you do. So with the understanding of what you just said, if they're no longer about the mission, then what do we do about officers like this?
So what you're speaking of is qualified immunity.
That's it, yeah.
And there's certainly movement to have qualified immunity be a thing of the past or something that officers aren't able to enjoy this sort of what seems like kind of a clean slate.
Yeah.
And what can we do about officers who are not on target with the mission and that oftentimes end up creating some of these devastating effects in our communities? We have to, one, do a better job of hiring the right people, recruiting the right people, and not using the excuse of, you know, in a community like Coatesville or some other, like to Mary's point, when she said it's so important to have officers that are of the community, that have buy-in and they feel like a stakeholder. Certainly officers that aren't necessarily from a certain zip code can fairly and effectively police a community, but there needs to be some connection. There needs to be some desire to make that community that you're policing better. And so I think it's important to do a better job on the outset of hiring, of training new recruits, and offboarding recruits that aren't making the cut. Don't worry about money and time that's been invested either in the process to hire them, because sometimes the hiring process can get really lengthy. It can get expensive if you're gathering an interview panel from folks that are in other agencies, convening interview panels. Like, it can be timely and it's costly because you're utilizing facilities to facilitate physical agility tests or proctoring a written exam. That's another expense. But don't be caught up in the expense and the time commitment if you have someone who was in your agency that no longer deserves to be wearing that badge. Get rid of them during that process, during that probationary process, where you should be really looking at them to see if they're making the cut.
Okay, so now, almost like relationships, you know, like when a man first meets a girl, right? That's not really who the man is, and that's not who the girl is. That's their representative.
Right.
I mean, then once they be together for a little while, then the real them come out. So for officers in the beginning, when they're going through whatever it is they're going through, that's their representative. Not all of them, but some of them, that's just their representative. As soon as they get their foot in the door and everybody start falling in love with each other, then the real them comes out. So now what do you do? Because the police union is like the strongest union I've ever seen in my life.
So, yeah, well, and you're right. Police unions can be, a barrier sometimes to ridding a department of a problematic employee. And, you know, maybe there's a need to have probationary periods be extended beyond, if it's 3 months or 6 months, that it be that year period. It's kind of hard to put on a front for a whole year and put things in place where your field training program is designed to really pull out who this officer really is, and make sure that not only you're looking at who the officer is, but you're looking at who your field training officers are, making sure they're properly trained and those who supervise them know what they're looking for in a quality officer, and also know what they're looking for in someone who really shouldn't be on a job. But you're right to say that a lot of times people are putting their best foot forward and they're just waiting till, if it's a 1 year probation, they're waiting for day 366 to really show their true colors.
And
once it gets to that point, then you have to have strong supervision that is documenting and disciplining and making sure that they build a strong case, even in spite of a union, to get rid of a problematic employee.
Okay, but let me ask you a question. This wasn't on the list, but as you're sharing, first of all, let me say, Eugene Lowry, you're here. Sissy DeShields, it won't be long, we'll be back in church again. Iris has another question, but I want to get mine in. With that being said, how hard is it for fellow officers to police other officers? In other words, slip a note under the door and say, this guy's out of control. You might want to check him out. How often do they get evaluated? Because that's a question that Iris asked. So Iris, let's put this together. She wants to know, how often are officers evaluated for mental stability, as well as how they feel about minorities or other races, and how can y'all help police the situation?
So oftentimes, like when you go into the police academy, like the academy that I went into, you have to submit to a psychological examination that permits your entrance into the police academy. And then once you're hired by a police department, part of that pre-employment hiring process is an additional psychological evaluation. Sometimes some police departments even do a polygraph examination, and there's been question about, you know, where that fits or where it doesn't. But often, and in most instances, matter of fact, I don't know of any case where police departments have subsequent psychological evaluations unless an officer poses an issue, unless they present some sort of, you know, if they're involved in a use of force situation, that seems to indicate that there's a psychological issue. Other than that, I don't know of agencies that actually have their officers submit to regular psychological evaluations.
Okay, good, good. All right, so here goes, I got two questions, but it actually, while I'm looking at it, it looks like it's only one. In light of recent events, where do we as a community and the police go, and how can we bridge the gap? And the next question, I think it's almost the same, I said, what steps need to be taken to rebuild trust between community and officers? Mix that together and make something out of that.
Okay, so where do we go from here, and how do we bridge the gap? And I'll add another part, because I realized that last question I didn't fully answer when you asked about how do we hold one another accountable. And there has to definitely be a change. So this is where the shift in culture has to come in when it comes to policing. There has for too long existed this idea that what happens in the uniform stays amongst the ranks, and for the sake of our communities and for the sake of our profession maintaining or rebuilding its trust, and for us to weed out those folks that should not be wearing the badge, there has to be some self-policing amongst the ranks. And people can no longer be either afraid to speak up or letting things slide that may appear problematic, but maybe not that bad. That wasn't right. I wouldn't necessarily want them to do that to my family member if they encountered them, but that's not the worst thing that can happen. Those are the times that you have to speak up when it's small, because if in the presence of someone you're willing to do a slight injustice, then you're most likely going to be looking to build on that. And, I think about it when it comes to disciplining a child, sometimes they see what they can get away with at first, only to look to see what bigger things they can get away with. And, I don't want to give the impression that I feel like that is the majority of police officers, but there's enough that have discredited the badge and that have taken actions that weren't just. And perhaps if there had been that checking by a colleague when a smaller infraction occurred in front of them when no one else was watching, perhaps it could have prevented something from escalating to something that had a more severe impact on the community.
It reminds me of Floyd George, because the death of that gentleman who kneeled on his neck for 8 minutes and 46 seconds, he had been doing some dumb stuff way before then. But that monster was allowed to fester because people looked at them small transgressions and said, hey, about nothing. And that's what happens. And now you see a city was almost burned down and everything, it done went global. But let me get to this question. What should people do when they encounter the police?
So folks should definitely keep in mind that if they encounter the police on either a car stop or something that comes up a lot in the city, there may be a crime that just occurred and someone flees the scene, and someone who is matching the description of the clothing and the height, the weight, what other information is able to be gleaned from the person who's reporting a crime, they are coming down the street in that same area where it's likely that they are coming from where the crime was just committed, and you're being stopped for an investigation. First, whether it's a car stop, whether you're being stopped for investigation, keep in mind that things that we may consider petty, things that a citizen might consider petty or that's nonsense, don't you have anything better to do? You're just stopping me because my taillight is out. You don't try to project the reason that the officer is stopping you for that vehicle infraction or for that equipment standard that is not in line, if your tail light is out or if your inspection stickers are out or something like that, or something that rises to a higher level, you're being stopped because you're fitting the flash. Number one is, and I say this with care because I know that it's sensitive when people are told, just follow instructions, just listen to the officer. You wouldn't be in this position if you just listened. Believe me, I'm saying this as not only someone who's a law enforcement professional, but I'm saying this as Kaisha, who could be in that same position at any given time, who has been stopped and who has known that I'm being stopped for what I'm thinking in my mind is BS, because the person in front of me, they just ran the same light, or the person in front of me just made that same illegal U-turn. Whatever it is, try to keep your emotions intact. Try to reserve judgment for the reason why you're being stopped. Let the incident play out and know that if there is something awry, if there's not a just cause for your movement being stopped, that you have recourse. But in the moment of being approached by an officer to be stopped for an investigation, in that moment, unless there's some real serious threat to your safety in that moment, it's not the time to dispute the constitutionality of your stop, because you may come across one of those officers who isn't in line with the mission, who wants to make sure that your movement is stopped as much as you're resisting that. And it's just really, just let the situation play out. And if you are being wronged, use all of the mechanisms at your disposal to right that wrong. But in that moment, you are almost certainly gonna end up on the losing side because of the person behind that badge having an overwhelming amount of authority and tools to enforce that authority that you just don't have. So right or wrong, with the exception of, you know, like I said, some an imminent threat to your like safety or well-being on a car stop, if you feel like, you know, you're being profiled because you're in a certain neighborhood, there's mechanisms for that. You have, you know, your phone on you. You're within your right to record your interaction with the police. I know that there's apps now that will activate your interaction with the police if you just give it a verbal command. Just make sure that when you are recording your interaction with the police, you're not doing it in a way that poses any sort of officer safety threat or that you're interfering with an investigation. Make sure you're doing it in a way that doesn't cause another issue. But do everything you can to comply and right the wrongs in due time. In that moment, it's almost always not gonna work out in your favor. And understand where I'm coming from when I'm saying that. I'm saying that as Kaisha, who could be in that same position at any given moment and have been and have known the law, the statute that was being, you know, misapplied. But in that moment, I knew that I didn't have the upper hand and that if I persisted, that somebody's ego was likely gonna feel bruised and jeopardized. And if there is an additional response, then now, you know, I'm at someone else's mercy. So it's tough because I don't want folks to feel like I'm saying if you would just comply, but basically I'm saying just handle the right way in the right time.
I liked it. You may have saved some people some lives and everything else with what you just shared there, because we all want to get home at night, you know what I mean? And yep. I really appreciate your candid explanation, and all my viewers out there, I hope you really take heed to what what Kai just shared, because that's very important. Because I know sometimes, whether rightly or wrongly, we are our worst enemy in the midst of a traffic stop. Matter of fact, we make somebody come at us, as opposed to, just like she said, litigated after the situation and everything else. I really appreciate that. Hey, Jessica Lane is checked in. Candy Middleton, how you doing, cuz? It's good to see y'all. Man, this is good. Oh, wait. It's almost like the longest interview we've had. But now, wait a minute. I like this. All right, tell me your thoughts. There's a couple of things that I want to ask you. Am I wearing you out? You still got some time?
No, not at all. We're, oh, nope.
Okay, there's two things. I got two things in my brain. One is like, what makes you nervous as an officer when you're on duty? I know you're always here, you want to come home and all that. What gives you the most stress and tension?
I would say those calls that have a really like limited information. You know, most officers that you talk to, they'll say that the domestic violence call is one that you dread the most, because they can be so volatile, unpredictable, and a lot of times you have very limited information going in. So those types of calls are the ones that really give me the most stress, when there's limited information and you know that there's someone who's in need of help. The person who is in need of help may be calling, giving the dispatcher very limited information. And those are the more stressful ones.
Good, good, good. Let's talk about the recent killings, Floyd George, Breonna Taylor, I believe. Tell us what's inside your heart and your mind in regards to the events that's been happening. And you can take it any way you want, whether it's a technical fault or just share with us a little bit about it.
So, you know, of course, I am affected deeply by some of the recent instances of deadly force that have happened across the country. The most egregious or the most visible being that 8 minutes and 46 seconds of George Floyd, you know, pleading for his life and then ultimately dying right in front of, you know, our very eyes. That one aside, Breonna Taylor, such an unfortunate circumstance. And I think from that situation is gonna definitely come a closer look at how warrants are executed, in what instances a warrant is necessary, especially a no-knock warrant like was being executed at her home. And I think what that particular shooting or tragic death brings up for me is the war on drugs, and how there's this disparity in the way that there's enforcement on the war on drugs and has been for many years in some of the most vulnerable communities. And from my knowledge of that particular incident and similar ones like that, where there's a warrant being issued, it's for a crime that involves drugs. And drug crimes aren't victimless crimes, but it's not a murder or, you know, something where someone has been actively brought harm. And to execute a warrant for that type of crime, I think we need to look at how that's done. And I do think with all of these recent shootings, we have to look at them individually. And although some have involved people who were unarmed, I, as a law enforcement officer, keep in mind that someone being unarmed doesn't mean that they're not dangerous. I also realize that just because a shooting is either deemed justified or likely, ones that are, we're still waiting to hear what the what the outcome is gonna be, whether they're justified, does it make them necessary? Was that did that person's life have to be taken in that instance? And of course, we had the benefit of 20/20 hindsight and aren't there in the midst of when the officer was making the choice to use deadly force. But I hope that what we can all take from this is, and again, this is a moment of me being candid. And Breonna Taylor aside, because that was kind of like its own separate, she was at home sleeping. But some of these ones where, you know, like Rayshard Brooks, so many names and they start to escape you. But one of the common things that exists goes back to what we were just talking about, is there being some degree of resistance or fleeing from the police. And please don't take that, me saying that, to mean that I think that that equates to justification for the use of deadly force. But what I am saying is, when you, as a citizen whose movement is being stopped by the police, are other on the other end of all the options that an officer has to them for using force, from a ASP, which is the baton, to mace, taser, and ultimately their gun, you're at the mercy of those use of force options. And it's not worth taking the risk that an officer is going to perceive a threat because of your resistance. And I think that's the thing that stands out most to me, is the officer's actions aside, which I hope are all dealt with appropriately and timely, is what can we do to prevent ever being in those situations?
Thank you very much. Quentin Brown, it's good to see you checked in. Roberta Steyer, I'm glad that you came on and watching. I talked earlier about you beating me at Pinochle yesterday. You can get off of this show as far as I'm concerned. But look, Ty, you are doing such a fantastic job. To my viewers, I really think you need to hear the heart of this young lady who is an officer. She's been around for 20 years in this business, and she's giving you the inside scoop on how we can come home safely without harm and everything else, whether we feel like it's right or wrong. I think we really need to listen and take heed. Oh, man. Hey, let me ask you a question. You think it would be advantageous to have a citizens review board?
Absolutely, I do. I definitely think that it's advantageous, and I think that there's some standards that need to exist when it comes to citizens review, that people from the community are vetted and are selected from like a diverse pool, that they are trained on the law, like given, you know, go through a really exhaustive training, like a 2-week training of really understanding the law and understanding that officers in the midst of making a decision, they don't have the benefit of, you know, hindsight, and making sure that the citizens review board doesn't take those things into account, that the officer at the time that they've made their decision, that they don't have the ability to use. But I think citizens review boards would definitely give the community confidence that their voices are being heard, that there's transparency when it comes to actions that are taken by the officers. And I hope that communities embrace the idea, police departments embrace the idea of citizens review board, and take that time to educate the community on how we police, what the directives are of that community, and how we can be more of a partnership. I welcome citizens review boards.
Good stuff, good stuff. Now, look, we've just about come upon that hour. Now, I'm telling you, we just breezed on through almost an hour. This thing was late, really, really nice. My viewers, of course, I will be replaying this and sharing this. And I advise you to share this with your family members, because we need to know. We need to know from the inside some of the things that will help us as a community in the areas of policing, GameStop, and all kinds of things of that nature. And plus, we got Kaisha, and she's just one fantastic lady. Now, look, this is your last call, Kai. I want you to share with the community whatever in your mind, whatever on your heart, before we sign you off. I just want you to just leave us with a bang. Just hit them with something special.
Oh, man.
I've been bragging on you. Come on with it.
Well, you know, I'm obviously grateful for this opportunity. And what I want to leave you with most importantly is I want everyone to remain safe and use really good judgment when they're having an encounter with the police. I'm a proponent of accountability and higher level of training for police, and really in some ways reinventing what we do and how we police, because I think the time is ripe. I think the mandate after some of these incidents that we've seen over recent weeks and months, and it's a culmination of things that have happened for many years, I think the time is ripe for there to be a almost a reimagining of how we police. And I want to see more community and police engagement. There's so much more that we all have in common. And, you know, as a law enforcement professional, as a citizen, a mom, and all those things that encompass who I am, it means so much to me to know that I think we're on the path to rebuilding. And I hate that it had to come on the heels of such tragedy, but I'm really optimistic of the positive changes that we can see. And I wanna see, you know, community members finding a way to be part of that positive change and understanding what it is that the police do, the way that we make our decisions, and you know, us understanding that we really all collectively want the same things. I think that's the note that I would like to leave on.
Oh, you're just so special. Look, I want to say thank you. I appreciate this hour went by real fast. And as always, my guests, I always like them to hit one of three bullet points: educational, informational, and inspirational. And you've hit all three of them tonight. You've hit a home run. I appreciate you. And I know your words haven't fallen on deep ears. And I'm just so grateful that you allowed me to interview you, because I thought it was going to be a problem for a minute, you know, because you're busy, stuff like that. But I appreciate you. I want to say thank you. I want to say good night to you. God bless you. We will talk soon, okay?
Thank you.
All right. Peace out now. Really, peace out. Ladies and gentlemen, AJ Dean, I'm sorry I didn't get to you. And Iris wants to know, Fonz, do you know if Wednesday night forum will there be citizens on the panel? I'm not sure, Iris. I don't think there will be. I know the district attorney will be there and some chiefs, police chiefs and stuff like that. But it is for the community. So come on out if you got questions. Look, Wednesday evening, 6 p.m. at New Life in Christ Fellowship, there will be a forum. You will have law enforcement people there and stuff like that. If you got some questions, I would be there to ask them. Tonight was so informative. I really, really appreciate Kaisha being on here. Feel free to share this. What else do I want to say before I go? I want to remind y'all that you need to fill out the census, because that's money in our community, education, streets, and everything else. Fill out the census, register to vote, and stop playing. I got to go because I got to go. I've held y'all long enough. Wednesday night, I will have Cass Rowland. Now, there shouldn't be a barbecue jumping off without y'all knowing who Cass Rowland is and his Big Boy barbecue sauce. They're sold in almost 50 stores, supermarkets, and everywhere else. He's a local, and I want y'all to tune in Wednesday at 8 p.m. That's July the 1st. That's just in time for you to go out and get your barbecue sauce for your July 4th cookout or whatever it is you're going to do. So with that being said, I want to thank y'all for viewing, and I appreciate y'all so much. You just never know. I appreciate y'all, and I just want y'all to remember that Coatesville is rising. and Black Lives Matter. Peace out.